Well, listeners, I hope this report will help you sit up and take notice. It brings to light an alarming trend. What's frightening to me is that I've heard from two parents in just the past 10 days about problems with drugs I'm about to tell you about. A recent report in the New York Times about the use of antipsychotic drugs for children, specifically atypical antipsychotics. These are drugs that are approved to be used for problems like bipolar disorder, autism, or schizophrenia, but they're being prescribed by pediatricians and others for attention deficit disorder, which they've not been approved for, although legally they may be prescribed. Drug names are Risperdal, Zyprexa, Seroquel, Abilify, and Geodon, and in the children who are receiving them off-label for attention deficit disorder, use of these drugs is leading to problems like substantial weight gain, metabolic disorders, and muscular tics that can be permanent. Doctors are calling attention to their colleagues that these drugs are not being prescribed correctly, and that's one example of how antipsychotic drugs are being overprescribed for children and teens in general, sometimes simply to improve their behavior. Well, of course, we need an expert to help us digest this information. So this morning, we've asked Dr. Judd Stoller, Associate Professor of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences from SUNY Upstate, to take us behind the headline. Good morning, Dr. Stoller.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for joining us this morning. I see a minefield of problems with this. What can you tell us about these atypical antipsychotic drugs?
The atypical antipsychotic drugs do have a place. They're important in treating some severe psychiatric disorders.
Such as
schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, certain types of severe dysregulated disorders in the developmentally challenged population.
So they're not bad drugs.
Not in and of themselves. I mean, they certainly have their side effect profiles and their risks like any medication does.
Sure, sure. But they're now being prescribed for children with attention deficit disorder, and that's not an appropriate use?
Attention deficit disorder is not one of the indications for using any antipsychotic drug, whether it's an atypical antipsychotic or the first generation older versions of antipsychotic drugs. That's not typically what we would consider for treating that disorder.
And yet the numbers of children who are being prescribed these drugs for ADHD is huge.
Well, I think that the number of children with dysregulated behavior patterns.
What do you mean by dysregulated behavior patterns?
Well, say they're severely aggressive. They're very highly reactive, highly emotional, severe temper tantrums and severe moodiness as sort of generic forms of behavior or symptoms. A lot of kids with the severe spectrum are difficult to manage with behavioral programs, with psychotherapies of different kinds, family therapies, and so on. And the atypical antipsychotic drugs have been used in some of these cases to help to reduce the intensity and severity of these highly reactive behaviors, sometimes very dangerous, aggressive behaviors. The problem is that some clinicians are now using these same drugs in milder forms of behavioral difficulty, behavioral disruptiveness, for example, that you see with ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
So they're using atypicals to treat things that are not as severe.
And now these kids are suffering these side effects, this huge weight gain. One of the children I read about had gained 100 pounds, and it really wasn't the right indication for this child. So how do parents know what they're looking for? If they have a child who is taking some kind of antipsychotic drug, they need to be looking, what, for one of these brand names?
Well, I think what's really important is that every parent have a detailed discussion with the prescriber, the practitioner, about the types of drugs that are available, the other types of treatment that are available for a particular condition, what the risks and benefits are of the different options that are available, and not to simply jump to what we consider the big guns in psychiatry before considering less dangerous or risky alternatives.
Well, one of the problems, it seems, is that the drugs are being prescribed by doctors who are not psychiatrists. They're being prescribed by primary care doctors, say pediatricians, even nurse practitioners. And so a real in-depth conversation needs to take place. But what if a parent looks at this and decides that the risk-benefit isn't worth it? They realize now that the child is taking a drug that they might not be benefiting by the way they should, and their doctor won't talk to them about it. What should they do?
Well, I think it's important that if a doctor doesn't isn't willing to talk to the patient or the family about a concern of that type, they seek a second opinion and seek a care elsewhere.
It's easier said than done. It's hard. You can't find a child psychiatrist in this town. It's 6 months before you can get an appointment, I understand.
That is very true. And if a parent felt that the harm that was being done by the medication exceeded the benefit, and the parent was not able to get a satisfactory response from the physician, then the parent could consider discontinuing the medication in a gradual taper over a brief period of time, a week or two, and discontinue the medication to see if the side effects were to subside. I don't think it's a good idea for parents to routinely discontinue medications in their children. We're talking about an extreme circumstance.
Right, here. We are. Well, in some cases, I think if it's tough to get that appointment and you can't get one for 6 months, then go ahead and make the one for 6 months down the road, because at least you know you've got that one. But also, sometimes I suggest to people that they find other parents who have children with similar problems and talk to them about success they've had with other doctors, some of the primary care, because some of them do know what they're doing and they're doing it right. And we want to make sure the children are seeing the right doctors.
I think that makes good sense.
What other advice do we have for parents? Anything at all that you can think of these drugs?
I think that the first thing we need to consider is that drugs are typically not the first line of treatment in child psychiatry. They're adjunctive in most cases. And various forms of therapy, various forms of behavior management.
Talk therapy you're talking about.
Therapy, management of classroom and home behaviors, social and environmental considerations, all of these things should be considered before drugs.
Very good. Well, Dr. Judd Staller, you've been immensely helpful. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm psychologist Dr. Rich O'Neill with this week's Checkup from the Neck Up, getting past the grudge Grinch. Dr. Seuss's story about the Grinch who stole Christmas is wonderful. We all recognize that part of us that spoils things when we're hurt, angry, and spiteful. Of course, we usually think it's in the other person. They're the Grinch. But anyway, how do we end the resulting self-righteous grudge? Well, dear listeners, a month ago I heard from my mom that a relative would be in town to see her, first time in years. He and I had once been close, but then something happened, I don't know what, and he's barely talked to me for decades. My calls and then letters to clear things up got no response. I've sent my Christmas card every year anyway, hoping. Anybody else have a relationship like this? I asked Mom when he's coming, knowing she often needs extra TLC around changes to her routine. Her 92-year-old brain says, I can't remember. Can you call him, Richie? So I called and left a message. No response. Then 2 weeks ago, Mom says he'll be arriving late Tuesday, and can we get together? Sure. And which Tuesday? Well, you know, Richie, I don't hear so well on the phone. So another message saying she doesn't hear or remember so well, and can he call me? Nothing. Then Sunday night, Mom says he called her again, and he's coming late Tuesday around 6. I call to confirm. Nothing. Tuesday at 8, Mom calls, worried. When's he supposed to be here? Mom, you said 6. Can you ask him if it was this Tuesday? I do. Nothing. 20 minutes later, do you think he had a car accident? 10 minutes later, should we call the police? By now, I'm fuming, furious with him, filled with self-righteous attacking thoughts that boil up when we get really frustrated. Just go to bed, Mom. We'll try him in the morning. An hour later, Mom again. Guess who's here? Would you like to say hello? I'm thinking, well, not exactly. And there it was, right in front of me, the fork in the road. Keep the grudge going or try to rebuild the relationship in the now. So I said I'd call back in a few to give my emotions time to calm down. Asked myself if I'd like to be friends and have fun again. Well, yeah. So I hit the delete button on the angry thoughts in my brain a few hundred times and reminded myself of a cardinal rule. If we want more of something in a relationship, we do well to bring it in ourselves. So I call, and he starts off with an apology. Thank you, and welcome to Syracuse. What can I do to make your visit go well? Well, Rich, can we get some time together? Sure. So, dear listeners, I rediscovered it's not how we feel that's the problem. It's what we do with our feelings that makes the difference. With some discipline and hard work and practice, we can say goodbye to the grudge Grinch inside of us and bring in a kindness instead. Who knows what might happen? I'm Dr. Rich O'Neill. Thanks for listening.